Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the very last Daf in this beautiful Masechta of Yevamos, Daf Kuf Chof Beis. We're learning today Lila Nishmas Joe Rubin, Yosef Yehuda Raphael, and also today is the date that the Daf Yomi will actually be completing this Masechta on Tess Tammuz, which is my mother, Aleha Shalom, Chana Bas Meir Avram, whose yard site is next Friday, and I dedicate this shiur to her at this time as well. Anything that I have been able to accomplish is truly due to her zechus, as well as the zechus of my father, Olav Ashol. Now, we begin towards the bottom of Kuf Chof Aleph Omud Beis. Three lines up from the bottom at the two dots. The Gemara begins, how are we called Chavin? The once was a guy, the Havakam El Yisrael, who was walking along with the Jew, and he said to the Jew, Kitol Aspasta Ushtei L'chavoy B'shabasa, or else I will kill you. He said, go and cut down this aspasta. Aspasta is a certain type of grain, certain type of produce, also known as shachas, which is like an animal type of a fodder type of a produce. And he said, go cut this on Shabbos for my animal to feed it to them. And if you don't, v'ilo katilnoloch, I will kill you. Just like the katilna, like I killed Liploni by Yisrael, like this other yid who didn't listen to me when I told him, Darmilei, when I told this yid, Bashel Lik Der B'Shabbos, go cook for me something on Shabbos, and he didn't do it. He said, no, I'm not going to be Michal Shabbos. Velo Bashali, that other Jew did not do the Bishul for me on Shabbos, Huk Talisei, and I killed him. So you better be careful. If you don't cut down this shachas, this aspasta for me right now, I'm going to kill you. Now, this guy, this Ovei Kochavim, had claimed now that he had killed the first gentleman who didn't cook for him on Shabbos. So, Shoma Devisu, the wife of that man that was supposedly killed by this guy, heard this information that her husband Nebuch was killed by this guy, and she went to ask if she allowed to get married. Now that this guy was speaking Lifnei Tumo, this guy was speaking and saying that he, in fact, had killed her husband. Since he wasn't coming to testify, he wasn't coming to be mad to her, could she rely upon this information and now get married? So Abaye wasn't sure what the answer is. So therefore he waited and he said, and we turn to Kuf Chav Beis Omer Aleph. Shohi saw Tlosso Rigla, he waited three time periods, three regals. So the simple understanding is this: the Shlosh Regalim, as Rashi points out, show you top Rashi, show you Tamidei Chacham Mikbatzim Lishmo Drosha Hilchos Pesach BePesach, and in the Rashi's elsewhere, it tells us the Hilchos Pesach BePesach, Hilchos Atzeres BeAtzeres, and Hilchos Chag BeChag. That's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah where this idea is repeated. And therefore, the people would gather together to learn the halachas shloshim yom lufnei achag, and therefore, that's when there would be a large contingent of talmidei chacham all gathered together. And the Abaye said, I'm not sure what to do in this situation. We'll see in a moment what he was unsure about. And therefore, let's wait till all these talmidei chacham get together. That's the first pshat in Rashi of Tlosso Rigle. Then Rashi brings down another pshat, is that they used to have at Nebuch when a great person would die, and he brings this down from the Truvas HaGaonim, Kol hanach rigle da amaroi hanu yom shemeis bo adam godo. So when a great person would pass away, they would set up a day of learning in his memory, and therefore midei shana b'shana on the yard site, they would have a great collection of talmidei chachamim learning on the yard site of that person. So therefore, there would be a lot of talmidei chachamim that would gather there, and that's what he's saying. Wait till three of these yard site days come by, and we'll be able to go and resolve this matter. In any event, at the conclusion of these three rigle, Amulah Rav Adabarava said to this woman who was waiting to see what the psak is her husband considered dead or not based upon that guy's remarks? So he told her, Zil Lekameh de Rav Yosef, go to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is a great, great Talmud Chacham. The Chorif Sakina, his knife is very, very sharp. A lot of different interpretations. This is all basically the same idea, that he is a very chorif person, even though we find that when we have Rabba and Rav Yosef, we normally say that Rav Yosef is the one who's tremendous Bekias in all of Shas, and Rabba was the one that was very sharp. Nevertheless, Rav Yosef was still very, very sharp. And goes, Yaivitz tells us, Yaakov Emden tells us, that that's why they said, go to Rav Yosef, he's the sharpest one around, he's sharper than all of the other people that have been asked this question, and go and get the answer from him. Others explain, Rashi elsewhere says, he has Lev Pasuach Lo B'Svara, he's a very open mind, so to say, and he can figure things out through Svaras. They're both basically saying that he will be able to figure out what to do. Now, others have the Girsa, the Rif and the Rush have the Girsa over here, that this wasn't Rav Yosef, but this was Rava. Although the Yaivit says no, even though there is that Girsa, he thinks that Rav Yosef is correct for the reasons that I just mentioned. Rav Yosef is famous also being Sinai, the Yaivit says. Sinai means he has tremendous knowledge of Bekiyas of all Shas. He says there must be some previous case that has been mentioned someplace in all the Shas and all of the memories that we have from Chazal, and he will know it. And that's exactly what happened. So she goes to Rav Yosef, according to the Gersa of ours, it is Rav Yosef, and Pasha Meha Masnisa, should be Masnisa rather than Masnisin, as you can see in the Masar Sashas. So there's a following Brysa that he was aware of, again, as I mentioned, from the Yavits. He's Sinai, he knows all of the Brysas, whereas a lot of the other Amorayim did not know all of the Brysas. And he found this Brysa, where it said, if a guy was selling fruits in the marketplace, and he's proclaiming about his fruits, V'yomar, Peros halalu shel Orlehe, he says that these fruits are Orla Peros. Rashi says, Peros netiyahein, that these were fruits that had been recently grown, V'yeshdom mishubachim miperos ilan zokin. And he's arguing that, yes, I'm telling you that they're Orla because they're better fruits. They're from a younger tree, and they're better than fruits from an older tree. Shall azikohen, or they come from this place, azikah. Rashi says, mipardes meozek, the Yavit says that this place was in Eretz Yisrael, place Azika, and they had very, very, very good fruits in that place. Then there's a whole discussion here, is this dealing with a Shemitah or not? Rashi Tosus have a whole discussion, but for right now, he's making the claim that the fruits are from Azika. Or shall netarevayim, or they're the fourth-year plants, which are only allowed to, of course, be eaten in Yerushalayim. In all of these situations, lo amar klum, the Brisa says, we don't believe this person, and you don't have to be concerned that the fruits are either Arla fruits, or that they're Shemitah fruits, if they're from a place Azika, or if they're Neta Revai. He says, you can ignore what this guy said. Why is that? Because lo niskavein ala shbiach mechkal, because he was only saying this to make his fruits better. He thought by saying all these things, that would add value to his fruits, because they were younger, they were from a very good place, or they were going to be more tasty, whatever the situation may be. So we don't believe him, because he had an alternative reason to say this. He had a motive to say this, and not the fact that it's true. So too, Rav Yosef says, this guy who says, unless you go and cut the fodder for me, unless you cut the shachas, this aspasna for me, and go and feed it to my animals, and cut it on Shabbos, I'm going to kill you just like I killed the other guy. So the reason he said he killed the other guy wasn't because he really killed the other guy. He wanted to put the fear of God into this yid, so the yid would go and cut the aspasna for him, but not because he really killed the other guy. And therefore, Rav Yosef said, Nebuch, this poor woman, if her husband really killed by this guy, we can't rely upon this for this information. Mark continues and says, Abba Yudin ish Sidon, Abba Yudin, who came from a place called Sidon, said, Omar, Maisa be Yisrael, v'yo v'kochom shochom b'derech. Another time there was another Maisa, where a Yid and a guy were going on the road together, u'bo'o v'kochovim, v'omar, chaval a Yehudi shoyim b'derech, shemes b'derech u'kvartiv. And then afterwards, he went and told people, you know that Jew that I traveled with? Oh, terrible thing happened. He died on the road, and I buried him. The Farshim discuss whether it's necessary to tell us the piece of information that he buried him. Some suggest it's only because he said that he buried him that we believe him. Others say, no, it's just an extraneous piece of information. And the rabbis listened to this guy. He goes, he was just stam talking. And they allowed his wife of this yid that this guy had said died on the road and he buried him. They allowed this wife to get remarried based upon this testimony. That's story number one. Story number two, we'll see in a moment why we need all three of these stories that we're about to say. Beshuv Maisa, another story was, Bekolar Shel Bnei Adam. Rashi says that a kolar is a chabura of people. Others suggest, however, that this is a kolar refers to a collar. The word collar and kolar are similar, and that they used to put the irons around the person's neck, and this was a way that they would control the captives. So this is what the Rambam says, and that's why it's called a kolar shel bnei adam, a group of people that were being led to Antuchia, Mestama, to be killed. And v'shuv ma'isa b'kolar shel bnei adam shuyum ha'alchil Antuchia, they were going to Antuchia, and u'ba'o v'kachavim echad, a certain guy came, and he said about that group, chaval al kolar shel bnei adam shemesu u'kvartim, that group of people that were let off in chains, or that group of people that were going to Antuchia, and the Rif actually has the gears over here that the guy said, if you can see this in the Gilgan Hashas, where he brings down, the Rif Isa Shayu Mahalkal Antuchia, this is what the guy said, so we know for certain it's that very group of people, and not a different group of people, the group that were led in chains to Antuchia, he said, Nebuch, they all died, and I buried them. Some say, again, the reason we have the, and I buried him over here, is because we want to specifically know that he buried each and every one of them, and not that maybe some of the people got away and he didn't realize it. And then based upon this testimony, V'yisiu es neshoseim, the Chachamim accepted this testimony, and all the people that were in this kolar shel b'nei Adam, all the people that were in this chabur, in this group, so their wives were permitted to remarry based upon this goy's testimony. And the third example of this is v'shuv ma'isa, another example, is v'shisha b'nei Adam, a large group of people, 60 people, shemahalchen l'karkom beitar, they were going to the karkom of Beisar. Rashi explains, kishabor beitar b'motzar, Beitar was under siege. We know we're coming up, we're starting Chodesh Tammuz, and we're leading to the ultimate Tisha B'Av at the conclusion of the 3 weeks, and that was also the time that Beitar was destroyed. Beitar was a very, very large Jewish city, and that was Nebuch destroyed also on Tisha B'Av. So the people were going to this sieged city, and a certain guy came and said, "Yomar, that group of people, chaval on them, chaval al shisha b'nei Adam, shayu mahalchem in derech Beitar." And again, the Rif has the gears over here. You can see this again in the Gilyan Hashas. Lekarkom shel Beisar, they were going to the siege of Beisar, and Nebuch, they all died. Shemesu ukvartim, and I also buried them. And the rabbis accepted this, v'isiu es nishoseim. So we see from these three cases that the rabbis, in fact, did accept the guy he's talking, lifnei tumo, which was the question that we asked at the end of yesterday's shir. What is our Mishnah talking about if they're not coming or allowing the guy to testify in any way, shape, or form in a formal testimony? So when do we accept the guy? So it's when he's talking, mesiach lifnei tumo, when he's stopped talking and telling us information, not with the intention of testifying. The Aruch Lanier has a very interesting explanation for why we need the three cases. Says each one is a chiddush on the other one. The first one is telling us that when there's one individual over here, so he is believed to say that that one individual was the one that he in fact buried, that Nebuch died. And then in the second group, with the kolor shal b'nei Adam, so the chiddush is over here, you might not have thought that he was medaktik, that the entire group was actually killed. But yes, we believe him when he says the entire group was killed. As they mentioned, some suggest that's why it mentions that he specifically buried them, so he can tell you, I personally buried this number of people that were in this group. And then the third case is to tell us that even if it's a time of war, where we have the concern that we mentioned early in this parak, in the last parak, of bidami, that maybe the person will assume certain things in a time of war. So this was the siege of Beitar, and the Romans were killing the Jews left and right. So this person saw this group under attack, and he just quickly ran away and just assumed that they were all wiped out. So therefore, this is telling us, even though there's the concern of bidami, that maybe he's presuming that they're dead, no, we believe him in this situation, and in each one of these situations, the rabbis allowed their wives to remarry. Now we go to the next Mishnah. Mi'idin l'or haner ulir halavon. If a person claims that he saw somebody dead, but he didn't see them in bright daylight, he saw them either by a candlelight or he saw them by the moon's light, so we believe him, as long as he says that this is who it was, if he's able to identify the dead person, so we believe him. There are certain situations, for example, when you read Maros, when you read certain Negoyim, that you have to read them in daylight, so it wouldn't be acceptable to read them by candlelight or by the light of the moon, but in this situation, where the witness is able to claim that he's able to identify the dead person, so we believe him. Furthermore, the Mishnah tells us, umasin alpi baskol. Now, a baskol is a normal, when we use the term baskol, we mean a voice that comes out from Shemayim. Here it's not clear if that's what it means. Some suggest, yes, that's what it does mean, and this is prior to the famous Gemara in Erevin on Daf Yud Gimel, where we said the famous machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya and Rabbi Elazar Hyrcanus, Rabbi Elazar HaGadol, as to whether or not we do believe in a baskol. So at that point in time, Rabbi Yeshua said, lo b'shamayimi, and we don't believe in a baskol. So this Mishnah occurred beforehand. As we'll see, this is an earlier Mishnah. As we'll see, there are versions of these Mishnayis here that we're going to have in this last daf that are Mishnah Rishona. So this too over here was prior to that halachic psak, the lo b'shamayimi. In any event, so if you heard a baskol, according to the version that it means a baskol for Shemayim, others say that you just heard an echo. A baskol could just be an echo. In other words, you couldn't see who said it. And in this situation, you'd be allowed to believe what you heard, and if it said that so-and-so died, you'd be allowed to go and tell that person's wife that she can remarry. There once was a person who was standing on top of a mountain, the Omer, and he claimed and he stated, Ish ploni ben ploni, so-and-so has mimokum ploni, from this place has Nebuch Meis, has died. And the rabbis went, they didn't find any person over there. Nevertheless, they believed what they heard, they allowed his wife to remarry based upon this testimony. Again, Eidechot is Neman in these situations because of the principle that we've mentioned many, many times as a Masechta. Isha, when she's going to accept this Eidechot, is going to be Daika Uminsava. She's going to check it out very carefully, and if there's any suspicion that her husband is still alive, she's not going to go get remarried. Therefore, when she does get remarried, it's only because she checked it out so well. In any event, that's what the Mishnah says. Mishnah continues, says another Maisav, Shuv Maisav at Salmon, a certain place called Salmon, where the following maisa happened. So in Salmon it was, Be'echad, there was a person, Shamar. He said, Ani ish ploni, I am so-and-so, ben ish ploni, the son of so-and-so. And unfortunately, I've been bitten by a poisonous snake, Nishachani nochosh, and I'm going to die any minute. I don't want you to know who I am, because nobody around here necessarily knows me. Vari any mace, and I'm in the process of dying. So this is who I am. V'holchu, and they went there, V'lo ikiru, and nobody knows this guy. Nevertheless, they relayed this information back to whoever he came from, and they went and allowed his wife to get married based upon this testimony that this person himself had given. They found his dead body, so they knew he was really dead, and they didn't know who he was, or the poison had changed his appearance, and they couldn't tell who he was, but they believed him that he had said that he's so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, and they allowed his wife to remarry based upon this information. The Gemara starts off and says, "Amar Rabbi Bar Shmuel." Rabbi Bar Shmuel tells us, "Tana, we learned the following in the Brisa: Beishami Omrim Ein Masin Al Pibasko, or Beisul Omrim Masin Al Pibasko." Rabbi Bar Shmuel tells us that this is a machlokas between Beishami and Beisul as to whether or not we can rely upon this basko. This is assuming again it's a voice that comes out from Shemayim. Beishami says we can. Beisul says yes, we can. Again, this is before the Gemara in Erevin. It's a simple way to understand this, that this is before the Gemara in Erevin that says Lo Beishami that we don't rely upon a basko. In any event, Beisul says you can. So the Gemara asks us, what in the world did Rabbi Bar Shmuel tell us? That we paskin like Beis Hillel in this situation, Michael Mashmuel, and why is he telling us this? Masdisini. It's our Mishnah. So we know that you're allowed to be Masin al Pibasko, so why is he telling us that this is a machlokes between Beisham and Beis Hillel? So the Gemara says, Hokam Mashmuel, there's a big chiddush in what Rabbi Bar Shmuel is telling us. What is that? That e mishkachas tomo, if we were to go find a Stam Mishnah, or possibly even a Stam Braisa, that says the Ein Masiyin, we should know that Beishami, that that's the opinion of Beishami, not another halachic opinion that we have to reconcile with our opinion and our Stam Mishnah that we are Masiyin Al Pibaskol, because then we'd have a Stam versus a Stam, or if we could have a Stam V'yachakach Machlokes. So there are all possibilities here that we may not accept our Stam Mishnah. So therefore, it's telling us that if we find an opinion that says Ein Masiyin, we should know that it's Beishami's opinion, and therefore Beishami B'Makom Beisilul is not considered Machlokes, and therefore if we were to find such a Stam Mishnah, we can discard it from the halachic process. Then we quote the Mishnah and says, "V'hochvul amatzu." When the person, there was somebody that had yelled out from the top of a mountain that so and so had died, and they went there, they couldn't find anybody. Nevertheless, they accepted it. So they allowed his wife to remarry based upon that. So Gemara says, "How do we know that it was a person? The Dilma shade hava. Maybe it was one of the shadim, and the shadim were just trying to be makalkal this woman, and were just trying to cause trouble. So why do we believe that it was a person? It could be a shade, and the shade would not be trustworthy." So where it says, no, I'm reviewed, I'm a rab, because Shiro Lodmo saw them. They saw it was a person. They couldn't tell who the person was, and when they got there, he wasn't there, but they saw it was a person. So it says, how can you tell the difference between a shade and a person? Inunami domo. Shadim look like a person. The Gemara in Gittin tells this famous story of Ashmodai and Shlomo Melech, how the difference between them, Ashmodai was able to masquerade as Shlomo Melech until they saw that he only had three toes on his foot. He had like toes like a bird. So that's the difference between a shade and a human being, but otherwise they look the same. So inunami damu, how can they say that they saw a human being and not a shade? The shade looked like the human being. So Mor says, because they saw that he had a shadow. The chozule bibavua. So he had a shadow, and shadim don't have shadows. Mor says, that's not true. Vinunami is lubavua. That the shadim also have shadows. So how can you tell me that it was a human and not a shade? So Mor says, no, here's the definitive answer. The chozule bavua. It had a shadow of a shadow. In science, we call the shadow the umbra, and we call the shadow of the shadow the penumbra. So there are certain situations where a person will see that he has a dark shadow, and then he has a much lighter, bigger shadow. That's the umbra and the penumbra. So a human being will have the umbra and the penumbra. But a shade, I don't know how this works, it's not something that we can understand, but a shade only has an umbra, it doesn't have the penumbra. Where says, how do we know that? V'dumma l'ditu islu bavua d'bavua. Maybe shadim do have a penumbra. How do we know that that's not true? So Amar Rechanina, Rechanina says, Amar Yonas and Shida. Either Yonas and Shida was Yonas in the shade, or Rashi says, he's a baki behen. This Yonas was an expert, and he was called Yonas the expert in shadim. In any event, Rechanina said that this Yonas told him the following, bavua islu bavua d'bavua. Leslu, the Shadim, only have the umbra and don't have the penumbra. And that's how we know that this was a human being, because they saw the penumbra and therefore they knew that it was a human being. One more question. The Gemara says, V'dilma tzara havoi, maybe this was one of the five women that we don't believe in testifying for the co-wife, for example. V'dilma tzara havoi, this was her co-wife, and she was just trying to be mekalkel to ruin it for the co-wife, to make her get married, and then she'll be not able to live with her husband anymore. So Why aren't we concerned that this was the co-wife? So the Gemara says, we normally would be concerned that this was the co-wife, but Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, they learned the Beis of Rabbi Shmuel, B'shas HaSakana, in times of danger, Kos V'nos and Afa B'shem Makirim, then if somebody says, I'm so-and-so, please give this get to my wife, that we believe that this person is really so-and-so, and we would give the get to the wife, because if it's Shas HaSakana, we allow certain kulas that we normally wouldn't allow. So to over here, this is considered Shas HaSakana, as Rashi says, Sha'adu Mesukan, the person was in danger over here. He go, Mishaya Mushlach Bavar, he was thrown into a pit. He's going to die in this pit. So he yells out, I don't want my wife to have to be considered to be a widow for whatever the reason. Maybe there's a brother that will have to do Yibam and he lives far away. That's the example I give. It could be many other reasons. So he says, let her be divorced and give her this get. And in that situation, even though we don't recognize him, and we believe everything he said, because he says, Omar ani, ani ploni ben ploni. And therefore he is believed. So too, Rashi says, "V'hochanami kishasa sakana dami." This is like a shasa sakana for this individual. Shimlo tam and lazeh. If we don't believe this voice that we see, this human being that we see up in the mountain, lo tim siachet. We may not find anybody else. And therefore, this woman with teshi vaguna, and that's a terrible thing. So, and the extenuating circumstances like the shasa sakana, we won't have other information. So then we can rely upon it. So therefore, we don't have to concern ourselves that this is a tzara. Why did Dafka, they say, why did they say it was the mother-in-law or any one of the other three possible women that we don't believe? We said it's the Tzara. Why don't we give one of the different examples that we learned earlier with those five women? We could have said it was the daughter of the mother-in-law. We could have said it was one of the brother's wives, a sister-in-law. We could have said it was the mother-in-law, etc. Why don't we say any of those examples? So Rashi says, Shenosu isha b'makom acher, because all of the others, we can say, no, we know the mother-in-law is dead. Oh, no, we know that there are no brothers, so therefore there's no Yibum consideration over here. But in this situation, we don't guarantee, we can never say, how do we know that the husband didn't marry another wife? So that's what Rashi says, Shenosu isha b'makom acher, and therefore, this is the other wife that we didn't know anything about. We can't guarantee ever that he didn't marry somebody else. We can guarantee that there was no daughter of the mother-in-law, but you can't guarantee that there wasn't another wife at some point. And therefore, that's why Rashi chose this example, says the Gemara chose this example of Dimotzara Havoy. Now we go to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, and this Mishnah is, as we'll see, a Mishnah Rishona, which we'll see subsequently with changes to this Mishnah, and this Mishnah really follows along with the next Mishnah that we'll learn, which is the last Mishnah in the Masechta. So the Mishnah starts and says, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva said, and we had this Mishnah actually in the previous Perek, where this was discussed on Daf Kuf Tes Vav. Now, Amar Rabbi Akiva, he said, Kishiradati lenar doi labershana. Rabbi Akiva was the god of Lador, and he wasn't able to, because of persecutions, be ma'abed the shana in Eretz Yisrael like he normally should be. So when the god of Lador leaves, so you can be ma'abed the shana in a different country, in a different place. So he went to Nardoi to be ma'abed the shana, and Motsasi Nechemya ish beis duli. He found this great Talmud Chacham Nechemya, who was from the place called Beis Duli. In any event, Amalo, this Rabbi Nechemya said to Rabbi Akiva, Shamati, I heard, Shein Masin Esayish of Eretz Yisrael, Apiyei Dechod, Ella, that should be Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. That's Masor Shasas, adds over here the word Rabbi, like we had previously. So this great Talmud Chacham, Nechemiah, says to Rabbi Akiva, is it true that nobody in Eretz Yisrael other than Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava allows a woman to get married based upon Eid Echad? Benomei Silos, Rabbi Akiva said back to him, yeah, Kein Advar, that is correct. Rabbi Akiva himself didn't allow it at this point in time. In the Mishnah Rishona, he didn't allow this. So therefore, this Rabbi Nechemiah says to Rabbi Akiva, Amar Li, he said back to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva is the one that's relating the story, that's why he said, Amar Li, Rabbi Nechemiah said back to me, and Moral HaMishmi, go tell all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael that you're going to go back, when you get back to Eretz Yisrael from Nardoi, go and tell them in my name, Atem Yodim, Shabedina Mishubeshes Begayosos. We learned previously a number of ways to understand this. The simplest way to understand this is that it's very dangerous trip, a treacherous trip for me to make, and I can't go back with Rabbi Akiva. He has to go back, he has no choice, that's where his family is. But I can't take that trip because it's too dangerous. And therefore, I'm asking him to relay on my behalf the following message. Mekublanim Erabban Gamliel HaZokin. I myself heard from Gamliel HaZokin. This is the grandfather of Rabban Gamliel, who is the contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. And he said, Shemesin Asisha Piedachad. He also holds, like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, that we do accept the testimony of a woman to become married to another man based upon one aid saying that her husband died. So Rabbi Akiva says, I then told this story over that what Nechemiah told me to the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, including Rabban Gamliel, who was the head of the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. And he said, he was so happy. Somach Lidvarai. He was very, very happy to hear what I said. But Amar, and he said, Matzanu Chavel Rav Yehuda ben Bava. Oh, Baruch Hashem, we now have a companion opinion to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, my Zayda, Rabbi Gamliel HaSakein. So now we can paskin this halacha l'maisa. And he said, Mitol Chadavra, with all of this going on, Nizkar Rav Gamliel, I remember, Rav Gamliel said, Shenergu Harugim Mitel Arza. There once was a situation that happened that I heard about by my Zayda, by Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein, where there were a whole bunch of people that were killed in Tel Arz, a certain name of a place. The Hasi Rabbi Gamliel, now most understand this is Rabbi Gamliel himself said this about himself, but the simplest way to understand this is the Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein, his grandfather, the Zayda of Rabbi Gamliel, who was the Nasi in Sanhedrin. So he said, my grandfather, Gamliel HaZakein, allowed their wives to marry. These people in Tel Arz that died, he allowed their wives to marry. The Hasi Rabbi Gamliel Nishosein, Al pi eid echad, and that was a corroboration to what Nehemiah said, that Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein, in fact, held like that. And now the grandson, Rabbi Gamliel, said, I remember this story now, you're reminding me of this story. Then in the Mishnayos, they add on these words, V'huchzuku lios basin al pi eid echad, and from this time and on, it became established that the halacha was that you can marry off a woman based even upon the testimony of a single witness. And as we'll see, that witness doesn't even have to be a kosher man witness. It can even be a witness that would normally not be accepted for edus. In any event, our Mishnah here continues and says, not only do we accept eid echad, but v'huchzuku, it now became acceptable, lios mesin eid mipi eid, even hearsay evidence, that we would allow someone to say that so-and-so told me that the person had died. And even mipi eved, even if that testimony was not from a kosher eid, but was from an eved, or even mipi isha, or from a woman, or mipi shivcha, or from a shivcha, all of these people would not be accepted to give edus, but hekilu, a tremendous kula, in order that women shouldn't become an aguna, so the rabbis were mekel over here to accept such testimony, again, because of the principle of daika u'minsuva. So we see that the halacha changed over time. And now, since this is a Mishnah Rishona, and Mishnah Rishona Lozozim in Koma, we don't change around the Mishnayis. So now we have opinions that were given prior to this testimony of Rav Nehemiah. So the Mishnah continues and tells Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Omrim, no, Ein Masin Esvisha Api Edechad. We don't accept a woman to remarry based upon a single witness. Again, they subsequently changed their mind. They were with Rabbi Gamliel, the grandson, Gamliel the Nasi and Yavne of the Sanhedrin. So they were with him, and they subsequently accepted this opinion from Rabbi Nehemiah, who told Rabbi Akiva that Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein held like this. But until they accepted it, they held otherwise. Ein Masin Esvisha Api Edechad, they held. Finally, Rabbi Akiva Omer, also Mishnah Rishona, Velo Zozim Im Koma. So Rabbi Akiva said, La Pi Isha, yes, we agree that you can get married, Api Edechad, however, not from the testimony of a woman, Velo Api Eved, Velo Api Shivcha, not from an Eved, not from a Shivcha, and Velo Api Krovet, and not from relatives. So this subsequently, Rabbi Akiva also was Moda that we would now allow this, but again, Mishnah Rishona, Velo Zozim Im Koma, so his opinion is recorded over here in the Mishnah, even though he subsequently changed his mind. Now, the Gemara questions this and says, Vasava Rabbi Akiva, Api Isha Lo, did Rabbi Akiva really ever say, even though he subsequently changed it, but did he originally say that you can't accept a woman's testimony to say that a certain person passed away? I'll show you that that's not true. But Tanya, we learn in the following Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Omer Mishum Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, the following halacha. Isha Ne'emenes, a woman is believed, Lohavi Gita, to bring her get from Medina Sayam, and to state, Befani Nechtav, even though she normally wouldn't be believed. But here we believe it Kav V'chomer, because of the following Kav V'chomer. What's Kav V'chomer? Even though those five women that we've been mentioning over and over again, that those five women aren't believed to allow a woman to go get remarried because there's always a concern that they really dislike this woman. The mother-in-law doesn't like her daughter-in-law, and therefore she may make up that the daughter-in-law's husband, the mother-in-law's son, has in fact passed away just so she'll get rid of her, because she'll then go get married to somebody else and the son of the mother-in-law will come back and now the wife of the son can no longer stay married to her. So we have to always be concerned about hatred between them, and we don't accept those five women to testify. But as we pointed out earlier in the Mishnah, nevertheless, and we had explained previously, that's because the get itself was the real raya, that there was a written get over here, and therefore those five women, while they're not believed to say that the husband died, are believed to say, when they're bringing the get from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael, so certainly Zushin Emes Lomar Beisbala, this woman who she herself is believed to say that her husband died, so certainly it's a Kavachomer, Eino Din, Shin Emenes Lovi Gitta, that she should be allowed to go bring her get. She's allowed to testify that her husband died, so she certainly should be allowed to go bring her get, because even the women that can't testify that the husband is dead, they are believed to say that this is the get, Befani Nechta, Befani Nechta. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said over this name Rabbi Akiva. Now, Noshim Shamru Chachamim Hudlo Mehemni. It's only those five women that wouldn't be believed. Say that the person died because of, again, concern of Ketata, that there's fighting between them, hatred in between them. But it's only those five women that aren't believed. Noshim Shamru Chachamim Hudlo Mehemni. Only those five women aren't believed. Implication being, Isha B'Yamo, all other women in the world, Mehemna, are believed. So how can you tell me Rabbi Akiva said that we wouldn't trust the woman in this situation? He clearly holds that you do trust the women. Someone says, Lokasha, that's not a problem. Why? Because Kan Kodem Shech Ziku, this position that Rabbi Akiva took, that we don't believe the women, was prior to the final halachic determination where he was molded that we do. Kan Liachar Shech Ziku. So before Rabbi Nechemya came, you're right, he didn't accept the woman. But after Rabbi Nechemya came, he did accept the woman, and then originally only accepted the woman, then he subsequently even accepted all the other people as well. The Isha, the Eved Kenani, the Shifcha Kenanis, anybody who would say it, the Krovim, he subsequently accepted all of those as well. So again, Mishnah Rishona, Lo Zoza Mimikoma. Now we go to the final Mishnah in this Masechta. And the Mishnah says, the continuation of the previous Mishnah that we just learned, Amrulo, the Chacham said to Rabbi Akiva, Maisa Bebdei Levi, Shehochu Litzoar, Ir Hatzvarim. There once was a Maisa with a certain person involved Levium that traveled to Tzoar, which was known as the Ear of the Tzoarim, the city of the palm trees. Now, the Cholo Echemehem, one of these Levium got sick on the road, and in their travels they stopped off at a certain inn. Veviyu Bipunduk, they went to a certain hotel, a certain inn, and they left their friend over there because he was too sick to travel with them. And they said, we'll get you on the way back. No, on the way back, on the way back, they went to the innkeeper, the lady in charge, Amulupundakis, Aye Chavirenu, where's our friend? And she broke down. And she says, no, Miss Lam, me sukvartiv. She said, ay. And the Gemara will say, she was crying. And she told him, he died. And Nebuchadnezzar buried him. And based upon this testimony, Vesihu es ishto. They, in fact, allowed this man, who was the woman that claimed that he died and she buried him, they allowed that man's wife, the widow, to go and get married. Now, this is what they told Rabbi Akiva. This is a woman's testimony, and we believed her. So they said to Rabbi Akiva, "Velote kohenes bepundakis," and shouldn't we let any other Jewish woman? We'll see, the Gemara will explain that this pundakis was actually a gaita. But they said to Rabbi Akiva, if you're going to believe this gaita over here, certainly, shouldn't you believe a Kohenes, meaning any other Jewish woman, and certainly a Kohenes, Lote, but Kohenes ki Pundakis, if you're going to believe this Pundakis, who is a lower level of believability than a typical Elicha Jewish woman, especially, for example, a Kohenes, Lote, Kohenes ki Pundakis, shouldn't believe the Kohenes like we believe the Pundakis? So what's your answer to that, Rabbi Akiva? So Rabbi Akiva told him, Amalu, he said, no. If the facts will be like the Pundakis, then I would believe the Kohenes too. What were the facts with this Pundakis? This Pundakis told him that Nebuch, the friend, had died, the other Levi had died, and she buried him, and then she took out all his belongings. Ha Pundakis otziolem maklo v'tarmilo v'sefer Torah yado. She took out all of his belongings. Now, if he had left and just went away, so she wouldn't have all of his possessions. So she had his stick, his makel, his backpack, his tarmilo, and his personal sefer Torah. So certainly, in that situation, she is more believable. So if you have a Kohenis that can give you the same other information, that would be fine. The Gemara is going to say that we really weren't relying, according to Rabbi Akiva, on the woman's testimony. It was on all these other simonim that we were really relying. Now that's the gears that we have. Rashi has a different gears over here. Rashi says, not that we believe the Pundakis, as our gears says, Likishatei ka Pundakis, then that is, if only these other Jewish women knew as much or provided the information that the Pundakis gave in terms of bringing out the Maklo, the Tarmilo, and Sefer Torah. But Rashi has a different gears. So you can see this on the first of the wide lines at the bottom in the Rashi's. Koloma, Rashi's saying, L'kishtei ha-pudokis de-menes. L'kishayimotze dover zeh emes. Sheminu ha-pudokis. If you were to go and believe the pundokis, it's only shari-lo aleo samchu. They didn't rely upon her. El-fi-tumah hisicha. She wasn't giving testimony. She was just stam talking over here. Ve'evile makel v'tarmilo. And in her stam talking, as we'll explain in the Gemara, she brought out his makel and tarmilo and sefer Torah, and that's why she was believed. But not because we believe a goita, not because we believe a woman. Now we turn to the final daf, kuf chav beis omud beis, where we start with the Gemara. Now, I should point out that nobody should take this as a pejorative way that we don't believe the woman, or we don't believe the guy, or we don't believe the Eved. It's a din d'oraisa in terms of edus that we're talking about. We're not talking about in any way knocking or not believing, or in any way considering them not to be erlicha emistika people. What we're saying is the halacha normally requires a man to give testimony, and none of these other people are accepted in their testimony. That's a din d'oraisa. Now the Gemara starts, my griusa dipundakis. We clearly think that when we ask the question, the Chacham said to Rabbi Kiva, if we're going to believe the pundakis, certainly we should believe the erlicha Jewish woman. So why is there a griusa? Why is there a negative? Why is there something wrong with the pundakis? So I'm Rav Kahana, because we're dealing over here with the Goita. Pundakis oved is kochal maisa. She was not a Jewish woman. Umesicha lefne tumo haisa. And the only reason she's believed is because she was stam talking. That she was mesicha lefne tumo, as we said, and she wasn't trying to testify. And she said, Zeh maklo, zeh tarmilo, zeh kever, she kvarati bo, and she brought out his makel, brought out the tarmil, and Rav Kahana adds, and she showed him the grave where she buried him, and some she also brought out his sefer Torah, like we said. In any event, that's why we believe her. And in addition to Rav Kahana, V'chein Toni Abba Bered Rav Minyumi Barchia. Similar answer was given by Abba, who was the son of Rav Minyumi Barchia. And he said as follows. The Pundakis was an Ovedes Kochav Maisa. She was a Gaita. U'mesicha lefnei tu Maisa. And she was just stam talking. And she said, Zemaklo, Zetamilo, Zekevish, Kvaratubo. Similar to what Rav Kahana said. So both of them were saying the same thing, that she wouldn't be believed, except for the fact that she was speaking Mesicha lufi tuma. She was just stam speaking, and that's why she believed. Mara says, wait a second. If she was stam speaking, so then they asked her a question. When you're asked a question, that's not stam speaking. They asked her, Vaha, Aye Chavireinu, where is our fellow Levi that was with us? Garmila, they said that to her. So how can you say she was stam speaking? So the Mara says, no. Kivan de Chazin Sinhu, when she saw them coming to her, Bachu, she broke out in tears, and she started to cry. And Rashi points out, that this situation, Haba Bachya, top line of the Rashis, Ainu Lefi Tuma, this is what it means, Lefi Tuma. The Kodem Shishaluha, before they asked her, Nu, where's our Chaver? Hischila Lomar, she spontaneously broke in and said, oh, I'm so sorry to see you guys, your friend died. And therefore, that's called Mesicha Lefi Tuma. And therefore, when she said, Omer Lehem, Mesuk Fartiv, she is believed. Brings out another bride, so Tana Rabbanon, Maisa Biyod Mecha Shabal Hoyd Ali Yishal of Nei Rabbi Tarfon. One time there was a person that came to testify that a certain person died, so the woman would be able to get married. And he told this to Rabbi Tarfon. And Rabbi Tarfon asked him, Omelo, Nu, Bini, my son, Hechato Yodea Beidu Shishazu, how do you know that this woman's husband died and that she's allowed to get remarried? So Omar, so this person who was coming to testify said, Ani Vahu, I and this woman's husband, Hayinu Hochamader, we were traveling on the road together. And Verodav Acharenu Gaius, and a marauding band of robbers came after us. And this person who I was with, he was a real gibor. The Nitla, he grabbed onto a Bichur Shalzayas Ubishacho. He grabbed onto this big trunk of a tree and pulled off a big branch from it. And the Hechsiris HaGayis Lachov, and he beat back this marauding troop that was after us. He was a real gibor. So I told him, wow, Amartilo, I said to this guy, Aryeh, Yashakaychacha. I told him, you strong lion, Yashakayach, I'm so impressed by what you did. This is the expression we use, Shkayach, Yashakayachacha. So Amali, so this guy said, how did you know my name? How did you know that they call me the lion? Kach Korin Osibiri, this is in fact the nickname that I have in my city. And my real name is Yochanan, the Rebbe Yonah's son. My real name is Yochanan, the son of Rebbe Yonah's son. And then call me the Aryeh, the lion, the Mikvar Shichaya. And I come from a city called Kvar Shichaya. Now, the man continues the story. He was telling him about how this brave colleague of his that was traveling with him, this Yochanan, Rebbe Yochanan's son, who he called the lion, who came from Kfar Shichya. So he said to him, Nebuch, liyomim chola umes. I don't know if it was from the wounds that he had in this battle, but in a couple of days, Nebuch, he got sick and he died. And that's what he was telling Rabbi Tarfon, that I know for a fact that this guy died, but you see Rabbi Tarfon is Ishto. And according to this Brisa, Rabbi Tarfon allowed this woman to get married based upon this man's testimony. So Gemara questions this and says, really? Rabbi Tarfon didn't do any drishas of chakiras over here? Rabbi Tarfon, oh boy, drisha of chakira, doesn't Rabbi Tarfon normally require that you do drisha of chakira to prove that this guy is telling you the truth? But Tanya, I'll show you another brisa. Now this brisa is going to be almost an entire repetition of the first brisa, so we'll run through it quickly. But Tanya says in the second brisa, there was this man who came in front of Rabbi Tarfon to say that so-and-so's husband had passed away. This woman's husband has passed away. And Amalo Rabbi Tarfon said to him, how do you know? How do you know this? Amalo. So this person told him that the story that we just had. We were all traveling together. And this marauding troop ran after us. Now in this story over here, this price has it that he grabbed onto this branch of a fig tree. In the first case it was an olive tree. I'm not sure what the significance of these two different prices having a different type of tree. In any event, he broke it off, the hechzer sagayis lachor, and he beat back this marauding band of robbers. I told him, wow, amarti lo, yasha kochacha arye, you lion, big yasha kayach to you. And here there's a slightly different version as well. He said, Omali, he said back to me, yofa kivanto lushmi, you guessed my name. In the first one, he said, how do you know my name? Here he says, you guessed my name. Shekach, Koron HaSibiri, they call me the lion from the city where I'm from. My real name is Yochanan ben Yonasan. Now here he calls himself Yochanan ben Yonasan and not Rebbe Yonasan. Again, the first one's Yohonasan, here it's Yonasan. Slight differences between the two brises. Who is known as the lion? Aye, the Mikvar Shichaya. And I come from this place called Kvar Shichaya. Nu, Liyam Mucholo, the man continued the story over here as well to Rabbi Tarfon. And a couple days later, he got sick, Umes, and he died. Now, in the first brisa, Rabbi Tarfon accepted this and didn't ask any questions. In this brisa, Amalo, Rabbi Tarfon says to him, wait a second, what that was the name you said? Lo kach amartili, did you say his name was Yochanan ben Yonasan de Mikvar Shichaya Aryeh? That he came from a village known as Kvar Shichaya Aryeh? Is that what you said? So Amalo, so this man who's testifying said, no, that's not what I said. Lo, ela kach amartilo, this is what I said to you, Yochanan ben Yonasan Aryeh. The Mikvar Shichaya. So, no. He repeated over and said exactly what he said the first time as well. So, Rabbi Tarfon tried to trip him up. He went back two or three times and said over, this is what you said, this is what you said, to try to trip him up. But since he said the exact same thing, v'kivin hezvarav, each time he was asked by Rabbi Tarfon, finally, ultimately, v'hisi Rabbi Tarfon hisishto, Rabbi Tarfon accepted this testimony and allowed the woman to get married because this man gave testimony that her husband had died. Now, you see, from the second brisa, that Rabbi Tarfon requires a drisha of a chakira. The first brisa he didn't. Seems to be a stira. So Gemara says, no, tanoihi. It's two different opinions as to whether Rabbi Tarfon holds that you do require drisha of a chakira in this situation or not. The Tanya. And where do we see this machlokis in the following brisa? It says, ein botkin edei noshim bedrisha v'chakira. This brisa tells us that when you're going to accept testimony about a woman's husband dying, we don't do drisha v'chakira because we don't want this woman to be an aguna. So therefore, we accept the testimony even without doing all the drishas v'chakiras. This is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Mishum iguna. We want this woman to end up being chained, an aguna, and not be able to get married, so we accept this testimony without doing the normal drishas v'chakiras we do. Of course, if they suspect that there's something going on, they of course will do drishas v'chakiras, but under normal circumstances, there's no reason to do so. Rabbi Tarfon disagrees. Rabbi Tarfon only bodik. Oh, so here you see in this brisa that Rabbi Tarfon says you have to be bodik. So that goes in accord with the second brisa that we broke down about the story. But the first brisa doesn't hold like this. And the first brisa says that Rabbi Tarfon doesn't require drisha v'chakira. And what's the machlokas between the two brises? Does Rabbi Tarfon require drisha v'chakira or not? V'kol miflugi bid Rabbi Chanina. They're arguing about a point that Rabbi Chanina had said. Rabbi Chanina said the following thing. Yom Rabbi Chanina, devar Torah, based upon Torah law, do raisa, echa dine mavenos, echa dine infoshos with drisha v'chakira. Both capital crimes as well as monetary cases would require a drisha v'chakira for the Eidim. This is based upon the Pasuk. Should stand by it. The Pasuk says, Mishpot Echot Yiyeh Lochem. You should have one set of rules. In other words, you have to do Drisha V'Chakira. You do it for financial cases as well as for capital cases. Aye, why did the rabbis change it around? Umatam Omru Dini Momonos Ain't Srichan Drisha V'Chakira. Why did the rabbis change it and say that we don't have to do Drisha V'Chakira in regards to the financial cases? In order, Shalotino Deles Bifnei Lovin, in order that people should be willing to lend their money. If the witnesses are going to be interrogated so thoroughly, so then even kosher witnesses sometimes are not going to remember every single detail. And therefore, the kosher witness is going to be thrown out, and Reuven won't be able to collect the money that he really legitimately lent to Shimon. So guess what? If we're too harsh on the witnesses, excessively so, Reuven's not going to want to lend money to Shimon. And therefore, poor Shimon, the people that need the money, aren't going to be able to go and get it. So therefore, Shalo Tino Delis Bifnei Lovin, in order to make sure that people aren't afraid to lend money, the rabbi said, we're going to lessen the requirements of Drisha V'Chakira in regards to the witnesses in financial cases. We have a very similar idea. We're in the Shemitah year right now. We're going to be writing Prizbul in a couple of months. at the end of the Shemitah year, according to most, you write a prusbul, which basically is there to make sure that people aren't hesitant to lend money. So if they know that their loan is going to be all of a sudden null and void at the end of the Shemitah, they're going to hesitate to go and lend money at this time of the year. So therefore, the rabbis instituted, Hillel instituted the concept of prusbul, that people shouldn't be hesitant, and therefore, shalotino delas bebevlovin. The same idea we find in Shemitah as we find over here. So that's the din that Rabbi Chanina said. And what are the two brises arguing about? The one that said that Rabbi Tarfon says you do Drisha v'chakira, and the first brise said Rabbi Tarfon doesn't require Drisha v'chakira. It depends what you consider the testimony of a man in regards to a woman's husband being dead. They're arguing about the following. Since there is a ksuba involved over here, when this guy comes and testifies that the woman's husband is dead, so as we previously pointed out, she can get married and she's allowed to collect the ksuba. So this becomes a monetary case. And therefore, kedidei mamonos dami, and don't require drisha v'chakira. That's the first brice of Rabbi Tarfon. But the second brice of Rabbi Tarfon, umar sovar, no, kivan the kosherin and eshes isliyama, since the effectiveness of this testimony is that this woman is now allowed to go and get married to somebody else, which would normally be a capital crime. She would be called an adulteress if she got married to somebody else or had relations with somebody else. So, kidine nefashos dami. So therefore, we consider it like dine nefashos. And now we come to the end of this mesechta. And we end off this mesechta in the way that three other mesechtas are ended as well. And in addition, Talmud also has this same quote in it. Now, these four mesechtos are known as the Bonayich mesechtos. It's Brachos, Nazir, Yevamos, and Krisos because of the expression of Bonayich that we're going to say in this last part. And in some of the mesechtos, it's a much more extensive end to the mesechta. You can see this in Rashi, Hochi, Gar Sinon, in the last Rashi in the Daf, and we'll read parts of it. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rechanina, Rabbi Elazar said in Rabbi Chanina, Tamidei Chachamim, Marbim Shalom B'Yolam, that the Tamidei Chachamim increase peace in the world. How do we know this? Shenemar, we have the famous pasuk from Yeshayahu where it says, "V'chol bonayich, and all of your children, limudei Hashem, will be tamidim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, v'rav shalom bonayich, and there will be a tremendous amount of peace in the world." And the Masor Shasas adds what we find in the other Masechtos as well, "Al tikri bonayich ela bonayich," that they're builders, they're not only just sons, but they're also called builders. And then there are a lot of other psukim that are in some places as well, but we'll leave what we have over here right now, and let's try to understand this. So first of all, one of the most beautiful vorts I've heard on this idea, heard from a rabbeim years ago, and I love to say it over, it's a beautiful vort. What does it mean, that Tamidei Chacham Amar B'Shalom Ba'olam? So the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set a certain amount of machlokas, a certain amount of war that's going to be going on in the world. So we also have the concept that the Milchamto Shel Torah, the war of Torah. So let's say there's 100 measures of war in the world. The more that there's learning going on, the more that those measures are taken up by the Tamidei Chachamim learning in the Beis Medrash. If they use all 100 measures in the Beis Medrash, Milchamto Shel Torah, so then there's no war, physical war left in the world. If Nebuch, there isn't a lot of Talmud Torah going on, so there's a certain amount of measures of war in the world. If it's not going to be Milchamto Shel Torah, it's not going to be Torah learning, fights, you don't know Pshat in the Gemara, this is the Pshat in the Gemara. If there isn't that type of Milchama of Torah, so then Nebuch, there'll be a real Milchama, there'll be all sorts of terrible physical wars in the world. What a beautiful pshat. Then we have the Marsha. The Marsha says over here, why do we end off the Masechta in this way? And Marsha says that the end of the Masechta over here is specifically to tell us that the Tamidei Chachamim are the builders of the world. Because you might have thought that they're destroying the world, because some of the concepts in this Masechta, such as the very one that we learned today again, to remind ourselves that Eid Echad is Nemun in regards to free a woman, that she shouldn't be an Aguna. So this seems to go against the normal understanding of the Torah. And we've gone through already in the Masechta why this is the case, and there are many such other examples in the Masechta where the Chachamim set up certain things that seem to go against the normal way of the Torah. So Chazal wanted this Masechta to end clearly to everybody to understand that the Tamidei Chachamim are the builders of the world. They're not destroying the world. They're building the world. And that's why B'davka wants to end off with this concept that they're builders. They're not tearing down the Torah. They're building up the Torah. And in addition, they're building up Shalom. The whole concept of Yemishu Miguna, they want to make sure that there's Shalom Bayis, there's Shalom B'nish La'ishto. They want to make sure that there's peace amongst all people. So therefore, it ends on this note for this Masechta. And finally, the Aruch Lanier says a beautiful idea. He says there are four mesechtas that end off with this idea is because it represents four ideas of shalom that we have in the world. You have the idea of ben odom lamakom, shalom ben odom lamakom, and that's represented by the Gemara in Brachos, which deals with a lot with making HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shema Yisrael, and all sorts of brachos. And therefore, that's ben odom lamakom. Then you have our mesechta Yevamos, which deals with ben odom lechadero, because your whole concept of Yibam is to go and establish the family name over for the dead person, the brother that passed away. So that's Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. That's a tremendous shalom, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. The next Masechta, which is Nazir, which will deal with Bein Ish L'Ishto. We know the famous question, Lomo Nismucha, Parshas Nazir, L'Parshas Sota, is because when you see a woman who's a Sota, so you're going to go and make an Azirus against wine, that you shouldn't go and drink wine, because wine causes all sorts of terrible things. So Masechta Nazir is the antidote, if you wish, to all the sorts of problems that can be between Bein Ish L'Ishto. And finally, Krisus, that's a Shalom, Bein Guf, the neshama, that is a peace between the guf and the neshama. There's always a fight, so to say, between the physical and the spiritual. So krisus, which talks about cutting off the soul from this world, so that's representing over here the shalom that we try to have between the guf and the neshama. By our learning Torah, we give our neshama gishmak, but hopefully we're also getting gishmak from it. Again, we learned the shir today. This is the day that is my mother's yard site on Tes Tammuz, and it should be an ilui for her neshama, all the learning, and specifically the conclusion of the Masechta Yevamos. Hadron lecha isha basra, hadron lecha isha basra, hadron lecha isha basra, uslika la Masechta Yevamos. And with this, we conclude Masechta Yevamos, Im Yitz Hashem. Invite people to join us when we start Kisubos, Im Yitz Hashem, tomorrow.